This week on RSBNB Update, we recap the player-owned farm nerf and examine the future of viable farming and the bean market, plus a deep look-through of the bank placeholders and improvement update, and thoughts on the most recent microtransaction promotion. This is RSBNB Update, episode 742, recorded Thursday, September 19th, 2019. Buying the farm. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis and myself in this week, as you know, it's player-owned farm week again. And, you know, this is an update. This is, you know, despite it being a nerf and whatnot, we could have brought someone else in, but I don't think that's needed because I'm here and I pretty much know farming inside and out. So,
I mean, you know farming. I'm a skiller by heart and trade. So I think we got it covered. Can't believe we're calling this an update, though. That kind of hurts a little bit.
And, you know, they did take one... They did do one very good thing with this news post. The news post is written as player-owned farm changes. Not nerf.
Well, they're not going to call it a nerf.
Exactly, but they were calling it a nerf internally before when you looked at some of the literature that Mod Raven and team was putting out.
Well, because they know it's a nerf. They just don't...
I still don't think it's a nerf.
Well,
because if you have enough,
you're getting paid, but
I'm not getting paid by anyone.
No, well, no, you will be getting paid from your shinies, and you're getting paid. Like if you do the farm for GP,
you know,
it's a buff.
I actually have to. I actually want to go into this first, and just a bit of a recap on why I say it's not a nerf and it's actually a buff to XP. It's because if you look at the changes that were brought in terms of the XP side of the player-owned farm, yes, everything was cut in half, and everything now scales in terms of health and happiness. But harvest XP can now be boosted by bonus XP. So if everything is healthy and happy, and you're running the full farmer outfit, and you're running the double XP from, say, Treasure Hunter, for that example, you are potentially looking at around, I think it's around 12% more XP than you would get previously for all of the animals,
right?
Assuming everything is
happy. Do you realize what you just said?
What's that? Treasure Hunter. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but it's not just a Treasure Hunter. Remember, we were sold on this nerf because it's necessary for the integrity of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to see about that, too. I haven't seen much movement on seeds yet.
It wasn't about seeds. And when we'll get more into this as we go, because we got some good, you know, we got a good listener question to do with it. But it's really hard to have that stance and to sell it that way when in the next breath you're like, hey, but you can use bonus XP, guys. You want to buy some keys?
Yeah.
Just saying.
And you see,
it makes
this is
a hard argument.
And this is what I'm saying with this is that yes, throw in a shiny animal, you're getting extra 25% XP on top of that. So you're looking at around 37% more XP than you would get previously before this update hit. And with that, if you have the money to purchase bonus XP with bonds, if you have the real money to purchase Treasure Hunter bonus XP, if you have the in-game GP to purchase shiny animals, you're going to get more XP. And, you know, I tried this. I tried this on Monday. I tried this on Tuesday. And I tried it just before the show hit. And World 2 player-owned farm, I really didn't see much appetite for shiny royal dragons.
And you probably won't for a while. I mean, there's going to be
I think the psychological hit is on people that this is still a nerf. And they're not willing to go out there and spend. And I had people offering me, and I want the listeners to hear this, anybody who's going for 200 mil or 120 farming, I had people offering me $400K for a 3-trait Royal Dragon at Adolescent. $400K.
Yeah. So
my point,
what that tells
my point is that if you want to go out there and get lots of farming XP, go to the World 2 player owned farm or anywhere people congregate, buy shiny animals. And you're going to get them for cheap right now, because the psychological aspect of the community, where the community is at with this, still sees this as a nerf. But if you had that double XP on hand, you're going to be getting more XP than you did previously.
Right. Now, if that is – look, I think that – you know, I do like that they can, you can stack your boost, your outfits, your like all the things that we use to boost our XP. I like that that is allowed now.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
But essentially, this has turned it into, it's much more of a viable now. And
completely agree.
You know, I'm not sure, you know, was that what we were going for here, because I really would think that the people that are, you know, complaining about the seeds and stuff, I'm guessing they weren't saying, hey, can you make it a buyable? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But
because there was a severe time gate on farming before the player on farm came out. And, yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, if you look at the magic seeds of the last 30 days, they've gone from a low of 22K, or no, sorry, last 60 days, a low of 15K down to up to 31K. They did spike briefly to 40K, and then they went down a bit. But
yeah, which makes me say, okay, well, were they mad about the time gate, or were they just mad that they weren't getting anything from going and killing Ganos and AFKing?
Precisely. You know what I mean?
It wasn't even about the farming.
Exactly, and that's what I come back to. And I put out a tweet about this past week. I said, hey, for anybody out there who is concerned about your Zygomites, you do one or two Toadflax farming runs with, of course, Ultra Compost, Juju Potion, Legendary Green Fingers, and I assume everybody has Magic Secateurs who's going to be doing farming runs for profit. That's 1.3 mil. And the Zygomites will eat 192 mushrooms over the span of 24 hours. So if you just did two herb runs a day, these Zygomites are going to eat for 3 days after you do that, based on the current price when this was here. So you're right. It's not about the actual farming. It's about the constituent prices. But this is what I always go back to, is that if you treat farming as an ecosystem, it is one of the cheapest skills to train. Whether this was true back in the day with farming runs and maple and oranges, because this is the stage we were at back then, where maple trees and orange trees were the most economical to do if you were just doing basic farming runs. Or if we're here today looking at how we're going to be funding mushrooms, farming itself is a complete ecosystem. And I don't think anybody at this point, after this update has hit and we've seen what the market has done, has a right to complain about the prices of feeding animals.
I mean, that's if you want to go through that kind of a work.
It's 10 minutes a day.
But like I said, that's
it's 10 minutes a day to do that.
Well, it's all going to tie in.
It's 10 minutes a day for two farming runs.
Right, but if you don't have bonus, if you
let's talk about that now. If you don't have bonus, if you don't have the outfits,
if you don't have any of this stuff, this is a serious nerf. There's no way of saying that it isn't. If you don't have access to those things, or you don't want to pay for those things,
right. And
this,
I think,
is a nerf. This does slow farming the farm down.
And I think that's where the old-fashioned method comes ahead, because looking at the prices of seeds today, just buy all your seeds to 99. And yeah, in that regard, I think what they aimed to do with this was focus on the majority of players out there. And I think we need to realize here at this podcast, we are talking to a group of players who are maxed. We are talking to players in some cases who are very efficiency minded, who have all the buffs, have all the outfits, have bonus XP. And that's why I'm speaking to them and I'm saying, this is a buff for you guys, but for everybody else, I think there's going to be some consideration if you do farm or if you do the old-fashioned tree runs.
Yeah. I don't know if it's not as viable if you don't have all of those things. And if you're not worried about the time gate, then you might as well do a tree run. I mean, and, you know, it's not like that's bad. That's how we got our 99.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yeah. But at the same time, it's not what we had gotten used to. It's not what we had hoped for when the farm came out. I'll leave it at there because I have more on the farm later.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's hard for me to say because I am living in my own bubble with this, in that I have been part of this farming ecosystem ever since the skill came out, and I know it inside and out, and there are things here that I'm seeing that have just become more suddenly viable in terms of the player-owned farm that really aren't being exploited yet, and I want to talk about at some point in the future, but I want to do it in a more structured way through an Informer article or something. And I'll just say,
I'm sure.
And I'll just say it involves magic beans.
Well, those haven't been. I don't even want to say anything. I don't want the attention drawn to it. I don't even look at it. Just keep on
I'll
going.
Just say that you and I and everybody else who has 120 and 200 mil should probably, based on what I've seen this week in terms of people not being interested in shinies, shift their focus to magic bean production.
Well, that's what I've always focused on because, you know, the way I look at it, the farm works out in a couple ways. You can have your daily or weekly experience, yeah. You know, people get all pissy, it's 1.3 mil a week or this or that. I don't really care about that because what I'm looking for is a hell of a lot more than that in a hell of a lot shorter time. And I'll take my time to save up, you know, I mean, I'll take months to save up, but when I drop it, I won't drop it.
Yeah. Also, I just want to actually talk about something else for the people who are concerned about XP, health and happiness and feeding. There's these things called beehives. And when the player-owned farm came out, honeycombs were selling for about 20K each. They're below 10K currently right now in-game. And the woadleaf honeycombs that boost health are even less than that. So, I mean, we focused on feeding so much, I feel like the honeycomb side of it cannot be ignored as well.
No, but I think the honeycombs, if you remember when it first dropped, part of the reason for the honeycombs keeping them healthy was for the breeding.
Yes.
That was for the breeding pen because the breeding was really slow.
Yeah.
And we went back to that really slow rate of breeding, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better than day one of the farm because at least there's a possibility of the other pens, but it's considerably slower. But I think that's why the honeycombs were so sought after, you know, in those first few weeks.
Yeah, delicious honeycomb right now, 562 GP.
Yeah. If you have the money, this is a great time to jump on the animals and just all of that stuff if you have the cash.
I don't even know if it's worth jumping on the animals for this one because
– if you're a bean farmer, it is.
I mean, sure, but – okay, if you're a bean farmer, absolutely, because as I said, Royal Dragons, nobody was out there on World 2 buying them.
But you're going to get 2,600 beans for,
I know.
For 400K.
I mean,
like, dude.
And that's why I said, let's shift the focus to beans. And I'm not – saying that that's what should be nerfed next. I don't think so. And I think they would have looked at that if it needed to be. But my God, this update has changed the farm in ways that I don't think people have realized yet.
Oh, I 100% agree with you there. 100%.
All you need to do is look at the magic beans.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe I should, instead of focusing on producing shinies, well, I mean, 2,600 versus 2,200, right? And the extra time to grow up, too. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's worth it to just do the regular black dragons. I don't know. But this is where we're at, folks. I mean, I thought the people would be interested in buying shiny dragons and shiny animals. Maybe they're interested in buying shiny Zygomites or shiny spiders or something, for that example. I haven't looked into that part yet because I don't breed those. But
my guess is it's just so new. There's a glut of animals right now. I mean, there's more – when you have that kind of a supply, people just – I mean – it's just not in demand right now.
Yeah.
Because people don't – they're trying to figure out, like, what do we need. Once the efficient players figure out all of these ins and outs that you have already figured out because you're so into farming, I think this price is probably will rise as the backlog.
And, you know, and as we said, that's going to be a case of where the rich get richer because they're going to have the money to blow on double XP. They're going to have the money to blow on shinies. Yeah. And they're just going to get these huge XP drops. Well, yes, I mean, you're going to be getting huge XP drops with the shiny animals, but it's going to be a little bit slower than the actual black dragons. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth. But I think at the end of the day, this was an update for the better. Do you see it as that way yet, given our talk on beans? And the- okay.
Like, okay, look. In of itself, I really see it as 50-50. There was some give and some take. It's much better than what was first proposed. I think we've come a long way from there. But I'm not sure I agree with it becoming a buyable.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just against my nature to be like, rah, yeah, the rich get richer. Like, that's just like anti-Tanis. Like, I don't know. And I still think that I think the breeding and the feeding slow it down. And if you don't have all the extras, it's 100% a nerf. I'm willing to deal with that, but there's just a whole nother side and issue.
Yeah. I was always under the impression that royal dragons took longer to breed than standard dragons, but according to the wiki, all dragons are the same. Was that just a psychological thing?
Yeah, it must have been. I didn't think there was a difference.
All right. Interesting.
It takes longer. I think it's just because it takes so long to actually get the royal.
Right, to pop one out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I never even went that far, like, because, well, I was bean farming, so.
Yeah. Your best bet for that was Zygomites.
Yeah, and that's, but I was still
and
breeding.
And probably Chinchampas too, right?
Chinchampas are, they were pretty nice.
Yeah.
They were.
Because they just multiplied.
They did.
So.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, we talked about so many of these changes so much already when they were announced last week and, you know, weeks before. I don't know that I have much else to say on this except the fact that it's here and my initial reaction to it that I just highlighted.
Yeah, well, and like I said, it's not as bad as what was first proposed. There's some give and some take. I still think it's a little more take than give. But I'll take the strategic retreat at this point. because in my opinion, this wasn't as bad as the Hunter nerf. So, at least there's that.
Okay. And now just a question to any listeners out there. Would you rather have this month an article on the farm and its changes, and in particular what it means for beans? Or would you rather have an article on microtransactions and Jagex's financials for the year ending December 2018? Those are the two choices for this month.
I'm microtransactioned out. I want the farm, Shane.
Okay.
I want to see what an expert has to say. Because you're not like a super skiller, but you're a super farmer. So yeah. Like, there's going to be this whole angle that I think would be different than what I would see from someone else.
All right. Well, let's see what everyone else
see what everyone else thinks. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even know if I was supposed to answer, but I couldn't help.
I mean, that's fine. All right. Moving on. Next up this week, we did get the second iteration of the Bank Placeholders beta, which, oh my gosh.
Please be good.
I think it is. There's a changelog here. There's really not that much on this list. New NXT client. This moves object sprites into their own cache so that they no longer pop in while scrolling into the bank. That's something that was shown on a GIF before and is absolutely amazing. If withdrawing an item with worn inventory focus, it will now withdraw to the backpack. If it can't be equipped and there's space to move it to the backpack. Placeholders filters have been added, which allows for cleanup of old placeholders. Nice.
Oh, so nice.
Summoning pouches can be right-clicked from the backpack of the bank inventory, and summoning a familiar will still close the bank interface. Empty slots no longer have the placeholder graphic and are invisible. Good, that was slightly confusing. Depositing items with object variables, examples augmented items, will now prioritize the tab you have in focus when multiple placeholder slots exist. Deposit all inventory buttons are now in the same order as they are in the live game. I didn't even notice they were messed up before. The background now uses the general interface background rather than the transparent background, which is used. Good. F1 through 10 can be used to quick load presets, and the reasoning for this is the bank interface is a modal window. So if you have F10 or F1 bound for something else, it's just going to ignore that temporarily. Mouse over text will change to equip to make it more obvious when the worn interface is in focus. The highlight when worn interface is in focus and the bank is tall enough to show at least two of the inventories has been made more subtle. Yes, that's amazing. The bank pin interface now has a return to bank button. And in addition to these changes, the QA team has been continuing to test changes across the project while going through the bugs reported in the additional beta. With your help, over 60 additional issues have been changed in the same time, which should lead to generally improved and more reliable experience. So I'm going to go through this live right now on the show, because I think it's good to do that just to kind of get a bit of an opinion and see where we're at. And, you know, you can ask me to try and do things and I'll talk through where we're going on that. So I've got the bank up right now. And I mean, this is important for you because it deals with accessibility. So,
yeah.
All right. So I got my bank up. What would you like me to look at for this? So everything appears to be good and normal. All my items are here. What should I try and do first, Tannis?
Well, try to dump your worn equipment in your bank and see what happens.
All right.
Well,
so
maybe play with some of the presets.
Okay, I can do that. So I'm wearing my Master Farmer jacket because I was just at the farm, and I also do have a Divine-O-Matic equipped because it was time to do that. So I'll dump all the presets. And everything went into the game instantly. There was no lag. There was no delay. There was no nothing. So I've got the bank window small enough that I can have one tab for my backpack, worn equipment, and beast of burden. And what I should actually do, for those of you guys watching on the video version of this, is I should turn off the legacy interface skin. I did that because I actually wanted to see if they had that in place beforehand, and they do. So we'll just go back to how the normal interface should look. All right. So presets. I guess we click this cog, and my farming preset is as follows. It has 7 toad flax seeds, the wilderness sword, elven teleport crystal, and 2 law runes. I'm going to add a juju farming potion to that one because that's something I always take. And, you know, it's something that I think is important for the farming runs, but I never added it to my preset because it would always have problems with drawing it. So
right. That's what I'm curious about. Like, is it going to leave things in your bank the way you want it to, rather than, you know, how it is now?
Yeah.
You pull it, everything's messed up.
All right, so preset is saved, farming outfit, wilderness sword, and we'll go back to the bank, and we'll deposit all of the inventory items and the worn items in, and they went back to exactly where they were previously.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, the wilderness sword and teleport crystal in particular went right back to where they were initially in the list.
So nice. Now, this is something you might not think about, but for me, it's very helpful for things to stay in the same spot, like everything in my life. Like, I keep things in very specific spots so that, like, my memory can help. Can basically help, you know what I'm saying? Like I can use my memory to kind of make up for what I'm not seeing so good. So if when an icon is kind of small, like the wilderness sword, I might not be able to tell that's a wildy sword versus another kind of sword.
Mm-hmm.
But I would know, hey, it's third from the left on this tab. I know that every time it's going to be third from left this tab. And in this situation, it's actually going to stay there because. You know, right now, if I put that in the preset, it's gone.
All right.
So that's beautiful.
So I took a sip of the farming potion. Let's see what happens when I withdraw the preset again. All right. It withdrew a 3 stack of the potion because I do have a 3 stack in there. So that's the expected behavior. And what I want it to do is I want it to use the least used potion. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to modify that preset to have a 1 dose potion in there. You see what I'm doing with this?
Uh-huh. If it'll grab the least.
And there's also a checkbox, exact matching, and that is unchecked. So that's a checkbox on the preset one here. So this 1 dose potion, juju farming potion, I had a sip of that one. It's empty now. Now I'm going to deposit everything back into the bank. And everything, again, went back to where it was. I was in on my farming tab,
so
nice. My teleport crystal, back to where it was supposed to be. And
see, that's another thing that always messes up the teleport crystals because of the different charges on them.
Yeah, yeah. But I have one of the special ones that is infinite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we're back to normal. We have a bunch of 3-dose juju farming potions, and we have a 2-dose one. And the preset has been saved with the 1-dose one. Let's see what I withdraw. Oh, I didn't give back my outfit. Okay. It withdrew a 3-dose potion.
Did you have anything lower than that?
I had a 2-dose potion in there.
Oh.
But it withdrew a 3-dose potion.
Oh. Okay. It'll work. We'll work on that.
What I'd like it to do is I'd like it to withdraw the one that is just sitting there left over.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I'm creating this infinite stack in my bank now of the 3-dose potion, the 2-dose potions, and the 1-dose potions every time I go back to the bank.
Yeah.
That is one thing I would like to see changed on this, and I don't know how feasible that would be. So let's have a look at that, I guess, after the fact on this. So that's too bad. It didn't work that way. Let me just try it again to make sure that that wasn't just a one-time fluke. Yeah, it withdrew a 3-dose potion again. And
is the 3-dose potion what you have the most of?
Yes, it is.
So maybe it's going for what you have the most of.
Yeah. Let me see what happens if I change this preset to be exact matching. Three dose potion again.
That's interesting.
And it's also worth noting that exact matching is a global setting. So it says when active, augmented items will be loaded only if the exact perks match. Oh, so this has no. This is exactly for just augmented items.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense then, I guess.
So then maybe I would also say change exact matching to be exact perk matching or something.
Yeah.
Because it's confusing. You think it's going to be, hey, I want this exact potion, yeah. But it doesn't come out.
Yeah.
All right. That's unfortunate. That's my first disappointment, but it's a minor disappointment I see. All right. So I'm going to deposit everything again. And, you know, one thing I think we can always do is look at how the bank interface looks when it's really small. When it's really small, at the top right, you have the option to toggle between backpack, worn equipment, and summoning familiar if you have that out. But if you resize your bank all the way, you get to have different panels out in that you have both the worn items and the backpack up on the same pane. And to just see if this does the same thing for the summoning familiar, I'm actually going to summon a pack yak right now and see what that does with this. Yep, and this pack yak beast of burden is viewable right there on the screen.
Oh, that's great.
And the focus tooltip to show exactly where it's going to withdraw to is enough of a color change that I am happy with that. That's one issue that it wasn't exactly right on the first run through of the beta. And for those of you guys watching on the video version, you're seeing this bank resize. And, you know, just for clarity's sake, you're watching this at 720p, but my screen size that I am playing this on is effectively 2560 by 1440. So it is very expansive and very usable on all sizes of screen. So that's a very nice thing. What should I do next?
Nothing happened. They didn't do anything with the search, did they?
Actually, they did. Search is a lot more friendly to use in terms of how quick it loads in.
Let's do that.
All right, let's look.
If you're like me, you're going to be doing a lot of searching to get your bank straightened out.
Yeah, all my seeds are right there already. And I mean, every letter I add, it picks up additional items, and it's just instant.
Oh, that's great.
So search is good.
I've typed in entire words, and they don't even come up.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, they lag out and whatnot. So that's slightly annoying. I want to have a look at one thing I personally want to look at, and that was confusing last time, I feel, with this, was the little button down below with the cake on it. It's key bound to P, and it says, when withdrawing all items from a bank, leave a count of zero behind to retain position.
Confuses me. So that leaves a placeholder. Is that essentially what it's saying? Yeah, that's what it's saying, right? Yeah.
And if I turn that on, oh, okay. So that leaves placeholders.
Yeah.
So that's placeholders then. Because if I turn that off.
Why is that a cake?
I don't know. So if I turn that off and withdraw my max cape, it just collapses next time we start up. But if I turn that on, withdraw the max cape, close the bank, it persists. So that is placeholders down there. The placeholders icon is a cake for some reason.
A P would have been better than a cake.
I mean, once again, it's a minor niggle because I personally can't think of what would be a good example of a placeholder for an icon.
Like I said, a P or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. A cake really it's confusing, I think.
All right, let's me look
Unless
at...
That's Jagex being subliminal, like, look, you're going to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah. Now, there's also a fun thing here where the right-click option, you now have a withdraw all. So if I withdraw all my Torstal seeds, it's going to leave a placeholder. And if I turn placeholders off and I right-click withdraw placeholder, it creates a placeholder. So you can have it do placeholders every time you withdraw, or you can right-click to create a placeholder and say withdraw placeholder. So that's why placeholders is off by default. Is because okay. There's a right-click option to do it.
Okay, yeah, that confused me in my first time in the beta, because I was like, what's going on? We're supposed to be placeholders.
And I think that makes sense, right?
Click the cake. Yeah, that's fine.
So, and I mean, you can now customize the default withdraw X option as well. It doesn't customize whenever you withdraw X. It just changes down below, which I'm not sure. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I guess.
Yeah, I don't really feel one way or another on that one.
But you can change when you click so that it will withdraw X or withdraw all, 1, 5, or 10. So I remember saying this before, that the benefit of this is that if you want to do Herblar with just your mouse, you can make it so. And have it withdraw 14 at a time. So that's placeholders. And I see why that's left off is off now. All right. Filters. Ooh. Clean up. Items that can go in Mei's Quest Caravan include the six-age circuit, which I use because it's a good equipment item. The Shard of Zaros, which I use going to God Wars Dungeon 1. The Shard of Maw for God Wars Dungeon 2 and the Ectophial, so I really can't do anything with that. And then Diango's outfits are all shown if I wanted to get rid of those. And then Diango's other in the cleanup filter. Members items.
That's beautiful.
Non-members items. Worn equipment. Separated by category. Which is really nice. Once again. I wonder if it stays default if I leave that filter on. It does. So if I filter to worn equipment, boom, it's all there. Or if you have, there's another one, placeholders. So if you have placeholders for your best combat gear and you just want to see that, you can use that as a filter as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Excellent. And beyond that, I mean, there's extra tabs, of course. We have more tabs. There's, of course, the hidden feature where if you right-click the first tab, there's toggle tab position. So if you want tabs up and down, you can have that. I think I'm going to keep the tabs as is. You can change the icons of a tab by choosing Customize tab. You can choose an icon for all the skills. There's a quest icon, a GP one. We'll name this one Farming because it's the Farming tab.
You have GP for like loot tabs. Yeah. And,
Farming. Because right now my Farming tab icon is a plant pot, which I mean, you could do that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you want a specific skill one, you can definitely do that as well. And, you know, the tabs seem a lot more responsive and they're not doing the shifty thing when I withdraw an item from the next one over. You know how that you would always have that little image of the tab shifting over, so that's good.
Yeah.
I don't really have any complaints about this except for the way that stack presets are handled.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was hoping for. I mean, it's what I expected, but it's also what I was hoping for. And we really need this. And, well, actually, at this point, I don't know who needs it more, the players or Jagex, but we both need it soon to work really well.
I mean, the only thing I think that would put this over the top for me is if they had metadata searching. So if I type food, it would show all the food.
That would be
that
cool.
That would be amazing, but we don't have that.
Yeah.
Because
I'm really happy.
Because thinking about it,
like, this has more than I thought it would, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's even a button where you can toggle the equipment stats so you'll be able to see the equipment stats of what you're wearing.
And are you happy with the interface, Shane? Like, does it do away with the ugliness of the
I am, because my biggest gripe with the bank right now is that when you click the worn equipment interface on the current bank, it pops open the entire thing that shows the worn equipment and your stats behind it, and it takes up valuable space. And, you know, there's the question of, hey, am I withdrawing to my bank or am I withdrawing to my worn equipment? And here there's no question. If I have the equipment tab open, I'm withdrawing to worn equipment. If I have the inventory tab open, I'm withdrawing to inventory.
So
there's
nice.
No questions asked on that.
No more right-clicking, worn, yay, or wear.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I don't know that there's much else that I need to say on this. I think it's ready to go. The preset screen is a little bit odd if you have a tall bank because it justifies it right in the middle, so to speak, and people watching on video will be able to see this. But effectively what happens is if your bank is pretty tall, the presets pane will be right in the middle of it, and there'll be effectively a third of the bank space taken on top and a third of the bank space on the bottom that's just blank.
Yeah, I wish we'd get an extra preset or two like we did with the action bars.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, they're super expensive to buy.
I'm going to try that load preset again. Yeah, it's loading the third one even though I have a one-dose potion set. Let me have another sip of that one, see what happens when we put the two dose in. Because you can tell this is something that has bothered me for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Because, because, you know, I spend probably a minute or so, or a minute and a half after every farming run, reordering the way my bank looks at the end of it. Just because I want my potions to stick where they are. I mean, I guess what I could do on this is I could just eat the three slots and have a preset slot for Juju 1-dose, Juju 2-dose, and Juju 3-dose, and that would solve that problem.
Yeah.
That would solve that problem. But all right, withdraw preset 4 again. And it withdrew the 1-dose potion this time because I had a 1-dose in my bank.
Huh. Well, that's what you had it set to, right?
Yeah, I had it set to that. So now if I...
Okay.
Throw that away. Put everything back in. We're going to withdraw the 3-dose again. So that's pretty much my only problem with this, I think. But beyond that, I think it's ready to go. Is there anything else that you'd like me to test on this?
No, not really. I mean, I think it looks good, and I'm hoping that everything will ship and it'll be just perfect.
Yeah, and you know, one area of the experience I think that we haven't been able to look at because you and I are both iOS is how this performs on mobile.
Well, yeah, that's I mean
so that's another
true.
Question, but
well, depending on the week, it doesn't.
Yeah.
See, we need a snare, Shane.
All right, last call. Anything else on the bank placeholders update before we go?
I'm pretty settled with it.
All right, sounds good then. Well, let's move on to the patch notes of the week then, because there are definitely some interesting ones this week. So starting off, troll chuckers, shamans, and brutes in Berthorpe, in the Berthorpe Troll Cave, now have an equal chance to drop charms and therefore strange and gold rocks, but only when you have unlocked the Taverly Pathbook or have a skill total of 250 or greater. Seems a bit niche, doesn't it? I don't know who would go to Berthorpe Troll Cave to get strange rocks. anyways. An issue where some of the curse prayers would stall the player and fail to initiate a Telos encounter has been fixed. That seems like a pretty big one. Players can now correctly unlock the Perdita pet after killing 1,000 Solax. Environment lighting no longer changes suddenly when climbing up to the all-fired-up beacon east of Berthorpe, east of the Berthorpe Imperial Guard Camp. White and shaggy sheep in Edgevale that looked yellow are now white and fluffy. I don't know why they'd be yellow, but okay.
Weird.
The water fountains outside the Legends Guild now have an updated animation. And, you know, this is important. And, you know, people would pass this off as just being, hey, it's just a graphical update for the Legends Guild, right? But we need to recall that there is the progression of your character from Heroes Guild to Legends Guild and beyond, right? And with that, we here, and this is what I talked about in the farm segment, you and I forget how big of a milestone the Legends Quest was.
Oh, it's huge, dude. I remember. Like, gosh. And that was then to tell you, I swear the game used to lag a lot worse than it does now. Because I remember trying to get through that quest. It just lagged and lagged and lagged.
And, you know, getting 107 quest points isn't as hard now as it was back then. But the point is that the Legends Quest itself, from a lore and narrative perspective and what you do in it, is substantive and still is today on the arc that your character takes. And because of that, that's why this one little patch note is so important, I think.
Well, I mean, as with
the update to the
Legends
Cave 2 a few weeks back. So,
right. And if you did, I mean, the Legends before Lodestones, like, that's where you recharged combat bracelets. And you could get, that was a whole nother, you know, a whole nother, like, list of places
you could go. I know people who
still
use combat bracelets.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and, you know, this is part of that fitting into the right mold, so. Other changes-wise, a broadcast message for completing Anachronia Base Camp will no longer trigger when building bait boxes, as they're not required for the achievement. Players will now be able to claim the Tyrannan Quiver 4 from Elin in Priftinus, and Elin is in the Max Guild, so if you miss your Quiver, you lose it. You can also go to the Max Guild to pick it up. Simona will no longer give information about spiritual rangers for aviancy tasks. I just love these things to get mixed up like that from time to time. Fixed an issue that was preventing an elder tree from being regrown with magic beans. Adding farm animals to a beast of burden will no longer revert them to having a default name and traits. That's slightly concerning if you're like me and you spend upwards of 50 trait rerolls on one animal. I did that this week.
Jeez, man, that's a lot of beans.
Yep. Custom-fitting trimmed masterwork armor will no longer occasionally cause a disconnection. The giant and familiar now correctly gives a 50% chance to gather an extra item when harvesting trees and patches, and the giant and familiar's ability will now trigger when using patch bombs or the farming skill cape perk, which it wasn't before, so that's good. The giant and familiar also now states how many extra resources were obtained when using patch bombs or the farming skill cape rework, and patch bombs themselves now work with strange rocks, skill pets, and farming urns. The perfect juju farming potion now also gives Harmony Moss when using patch bombs or the skill cape perk. So that was a nice bulk of farming changes there for that. So that was good. I enjoy those. Right-clicking on the prefer list within the Slayer Rewards interface will now show remove preferences rather than allow this task. The Magic Secateur boost for harvesting Felstock and Bloodweed is now consistent, resulting in slightly higher quantities of Felstock and Bloodweed being harvested from a farming patch when Magic Secateurs are being used.
That's cool.
And those are some of the new herbs that were added, and they were missing out on that boost, and those are some pretty good ones there, especially with Bloodweed. I wonder if Arbok had the same problem.
Yeah.
Because that was added with Anachronia, and, well, I mean.
If it does,
That would be nice to look into. That would be nice to look into. Fixed an issue with text colors and the achievement window being hard to differentiate, and fixed an issue in the worn equipment interface that was causing the slot indicator to be offset when an equipment slot was empty. All right. That's it for the patch notes this week. Not much else to talk about in regards to that. So I think we can move on to questions unless you have anything else that you want to bring up.
No, honestly, I'm looking forward to the questions. That's kind of the highlight of my day here.
All right. Sounds good. But before we do that, let's talk about Patreon and thank the wonderful folks who are taking the time to support us on Patreon. And, you know, it truly does mean the world to us. So thank you. And this week in particular, I'd like to thank Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Darren L, Diana, Jason S, Kyle, Logan H, Ripeth, Sam W, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your wonderful support. And, you know, this week we don't normally bring new people on board and give them a thank you, but I think I'm going to start doing that whenever a new person just joins in the middle of the month. I'd also like to just thank KCW for joining and supporting us on Patreon as well. It truly does mean the world to us, all of you who are supporting us, but thank you once again. And if you want to learn more about that, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB, and there you can learn about the offerings that we have. So for as little as a dollar a month, you get access to the entire back catalog of the monthly bits. That poll will be going up this Saturday when we do our round table, which we've been doing for a few months in the past. The round table is effectively a discussion on anything and everything RuneScape related, but also with that you get early access to the show notes, the ability to join in on those roundtable discussions, the ability to vote for the monthly bit, and you also do help us fund some of the costs for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll get a special badge on Discord and a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show each and every week. And for $5 a month, should you want to go to that step, you'll receive a shout-out every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show at the end of the year. Everyone always loves that clip show, so that's definitely something fun that we're looking forward to. We're only about 3 months away from that, so that's coming up quick. And as we mentioned, we do our monthly bit bonus show. We have Inside RSBNB Update. Last month was a tour of Tannis's recording area, and the roundtable is happening this Saturday. I think we want to go probably at 10 p.m. Eastern on that, but we'll have, of course, full details on the time and whatnot posted on our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB. And should we reach that $99 mythical tier, it'll be movie night in the RSBNB Discord once a month, and we'll run through some of our favorite movies. Star Trek will probably be included in that. So you can find out about this and more at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thank you once again for your support, everyone.
Thanks, guys. I love the change, Shane. I like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah.
Added.
it's a nice poll, and I mean, people might not realize this who are just listening to the show, but I think everybody who has signed up and supports us on Patreon has received a personal message from me thanking them. So there's also that too.
Awesome.
Amongst
awesome.
This call out. So I figured we can do the call out on the week that they sign up. So
yeah,
that works.
Yeah. Hey, and just think if we hit movie night tier in November, we could watch Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, Lord.
Woo! Woo!
Ay, 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 ay. All righty. So moving on to our questions, we do have two of them this week. First up from Whitey, outside of RuneScape, do you have any other hobbies? Yes, RuneScape is a hobby. Whitey says, I keep tropical fish, and here's a photo of my fish tank. So let me see if we can get that photo up on here. Here we are, The Whitey fish tank is here. I don't know if we should call it the Whitey fish tank, but nonetheless, there's a photo of his fish. Tannis, what hobbies do you have?
Oh, man. I'm pretty much a gamer,
Yeah.
Through and throughout. So when not like my other hobbies are kind of like when I'm not playing RuneScape, I play a lot of ESO, and recently I've been playing a lot of No Man's Sky. And then sometimes like the Rocket Old School, and I do a lot of retro gaming just because, you know, you get older, you got to have all your toys that you had when you were a kid, because there's just something about that with guys that we have to do that. And, but I mean, non-gaming things, like I'm a just insatiable reader. I'm almost always reading. If I am not on Discord, I'm listening to an audiobook while I'm gaming. Just always. I rarely.
Yeah, that's one of the fun things about audiobooks is you can do it while you're doing things you couldn't normally, because you don't need to hold the book and use your eyes, so to speak. You're just using your brain and your ears.
Right, and I mean, I guess in a way, luckily for me, I got really used to it in college, because believe it or not, when you listen to a book, it runs a whole completely different pathways in your brain, and so it's hard for people to get used to it at first. It's hard for them to retain what they read, what they listen to, but since that's always been my default, I'm really, really good at it. It made me really good at like being able to listen to lectures and remember what's talked about. So I do that. And I walk a lot. I try to walk like at least 4 or 5 miles a day. And once again, I'm usually listening either to a podcast or an audiobook. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And raising beagles apparently too.
Yes. Yes. The beagles. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, sounds good. You know, for me, aside from RuneScape, you know, I would say my two biggest things aside from this are gaming, just like yourself. I would love to do more competitive gaming. You know, Overwatch, I used to be leader of one of the – we called it competitive, though. I mean, I don't know if you can call Star Trek Online PvP competitive. I used to be leaders back probably – 5-6 years ago of one of the best PvP fleet / clan in Star Trek Online. And, you know, that was definitely something in itself too. And, you know, it was an interesting experience, and it's something I haven't been able to replicate anywhere yet in terms of competitive gaming. I think the closest I've come to that was Overwatch. And it just takes a different kind of person to be able to do that at that kind of level. You need people who are, for a better term, alpha personalities. You need people who are able to take criticism constantly, one way or the other, and not take it personally in terms of that. And, you know, that's something that I think not many people realize, is that, yeah, you can play a game casually like Overwatch or RuneScape, but there is a completely different scene behind it from the competitive aspect of it, and especially from Star Trek Online. I know there are many cases there where we would be at each other's throats because of that, about, you know, deconstructing what happened in this match, how did this go right, how did this go wrong kind of thing. And, you know, there were times that I felt the analytics of the match was actually more interesting than the match itself. So I'd say competitive gaming is something I'd like to do more of. It's something that I have done in the past and I'd like to do more of now. But I'd put myself in the same category of you gaming, but you know, if it's going to be a choice sometimes between gaming or maybe even some light programming, for example, here and there. And I don't know if you can call this a hobby. It's probably not a hobby that's good for the health of people. But watching politics and watching the media and how they work, that can be entertaining. But oh boy, it can also be a wreck on the brain just to try and fathom some of the things that are happening in the world at this day and age. So we got another one of those years coming up next year in the U.S. in 2020.
And you're Canadian. Just think how I feel.
Yeah, and we're watching one of those moments in Canada right now. For those of you guys listening in the future, look back to September 19th to see what was happening in Canada. But I think we can leave that at that. So I think that's what I could put my hobbies at. So thank you, Whitey, for that question. All right. Let's dive into this next one from Lynchpin, one of our Twitter followers. And
let me Whitey, get my knife and my fork.
Whitey sent that one in from Twitter as well. So thank you both of you for your Twitter questions. It's a fun way of taking questions that we really didn't do much of before. But hey, it works and it's good. So from Lynchpin, with all of the talk on Treasure Hunter being overpowered recently, do you think RuneScape should drop the subscription model and make all their money from microtransactions? I feel like the population would go up and they'd make money. I don't spend any money on microtransactions, but I don't mind that it is in-game. What a timely Dude. Question.
Dude, the funny thing was, I just read this. I knew the question, right? But I just actually read the question, like, I don't know, a little while ago. And I was like, oh, holy crap. Holy crap. This is going to play right into what I wanted to talk about.
All right. I want to actually start this off by I'm going to answer the question first, then we're going to dive real deep into this one. So, no, I don't think they should drop the subscription model from the game entirely and focus entirely on microtransactions. I think with the Chinese ownership and the way microtransactions in the world have been going recently, that would not be the sound fiscal decision to make. What do you think?
Well, okay, I agree with you, but there's no way that I can answer this without going into what I want to talk about.
Let me handle my other point then that I need to get off my chest from last week. So you recall that last week when we were talking about the smoldering volcanoes, I believe it was called, I talked about how Jagex was always making profit and how RuneScape 3 makes its own profit. And, you know, we said that, hey, RuneScape 3 is standing on its own, old school is not paying for us, yada, 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 right? Recall that. Mm-hmm. Now, it so turns out that Jagex being a company in the UK, companies in the UK are required to file their annual returns to a UK website called Companies House. And for the past 2 years, I've done effectively what amounts to a fiscal analysis of the company in terms of the money they bring in, the money that they're losing in some cases, and where microtransactions is at. So let's talk about this, because I wasn't aware that this report had come out, because it didn't come out till late September last year, but it came out in June this year. So I just checked on it. And I want to read something to you guys from this report right now. So, first and foremost, Jagex made a substantial amount of money last year in terms of profit. They made something, I think it was like £46 million profit, if I recall correctly. Let me just dig up the exact number here, because I know doing financials, you want to be exact as you can. And, you know, with that, this is good. So, last year, Jagex made £92.8 million of revenue. And with that, £61.2 million gross profit. Sorry, the 46 came from something else. So £92.8 million of revenue was £61.2 million profit for the year ending December 31st, 2018. Revenue is up that year from $84.3 million the previous year, but profit is down by about £300,000 from the previous year. So for all intents and purposes, profit stayed the same. Subscription revenue for the last year was £67.6 million, up from £55 million the year before. So in 2018, they made £12 million more from subscription revenue than they did the year previously. Okay? Now, here's what everybody needs to realize, and we don't know what 2019 looks like yet. But in 2018, microtransaction revenue was down to $24.6 million from $29.2 million the year previous. And the reason for it is follows, and this is from directly in the report. RuneScape's high product revenue remained stable at £47 million. 2017, £52 million. The year-on-year difference being an intentional rebalance of microtransaction offerings to boost product longevity and maintain good player sentiment. The team continues to provide regular new game content, made ongoing refinements to the game's operations. Old school RuneScape's product revenue increased to £42 million in 2018. In 2017, it was £32 million. So old school made £10 million more in 2018 than it did in 2017. Keep in mind that the old school mobile version of the game didn't launch until October 31st, so only 2 months would have been included in this, and I don't think you're going to make £10 million off of mobile in 2 months. So that's point number one I wanted to make, is that there's £5 million less in terms of microtransaction revenue than there was the year previous. Now, there's one other thing I want to highlight before we dive deep in on the semantics of the question and Tanis's idea on this here. So subscription revenue, I mentioned, was $67.6 million in 2018. Microtransactions was $24.6 million, down from $29.2 million. But subscription revenue was up. And overall, because of this, there was more revenue brought into the company year over year. And we don't know if this trend to pull back on microtransactions is continuing into 2019. We won't know until next summer on this, when this report is released. But there is good reason out there to believe that they would continue on this model, showing that subscription revenue can grow and microtransaction revenue can decrease. And that's why I don't think it's a good thing to just say, hey, let's stop the subscription and just do microtransactions entirely.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great case that you laid out. I mean, I think the recent evidence is kind of going the other way there, but
yeah,
you know, but I don't have it's hard to say, like, how has it been since January? I don't remember.
And I mean, to me, I don't notice anything different in the amount that they're pushing microtransactions because they don't pay attention to it. And right. Only the numbers at the end of the year can tell that true story, and their internal marketing tactics, which of course we aren't privy to.
Right. No, I agree. I honestly, even last week, I thought, well, this is more of the same
volcanoes.
It's more of the same of the, you know, and the reason why was people have been crying wolf about microtransactions since the day they came into the game. Right. So
yeah,
after a while, you don't pay attention to it anymore. Like, you're just like, yeah, they're okay, whatever. And I didn't really think about the implications, the bigger picture. And before I start to describe the bigger picture, I just want to let everyone know, like, Shane doesn't know what I'm going to say here, because I've saved this, because I want just a true, authentic reaction here. But I believe all of this is connected.
Oh, actually, can I just say one more thing and see if this might influence what you're going to say before we do this here? So, £47 million, give or take, on RuneScape 3 revenue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we also know that there was $24.6 million microtransaction revenue. So if we go $47 million minus $24.6 million, that leaves $22.4 million RuneScape 3 subscription revenue. So there is more microtransaction revenue funneling in through RS3 than subscription revenue.
Yeah. Because
old school does not have microtransactions, right?
Right. They're making it on their subscriptions, and they have so many. I mean, they're three times the population. So,
maybe bots and whatnot. I mean, it's hard to say. It's hard to say.
They still have to pay, though, right? Which is probably why they're still there. Because we know Jagex has the technology to take out bots. Like, that's not really in question. But, I mean, that's you know, whatever. But when I think of a freemium model, right, there's a few planks in that I think of. One, you usually have the option of when it comes to leveling. What's the word for leveling?
Power leveling.
Progression. Okay. So one in a freemium model, you progress either through a slow grind for free.
Sure.
Or you pay for a faster progression.
Right.
All right. This is what I'm really afraid of and what I just kind of what's dawned on me. Look at what has been happening. It's more than just a treasure hunter promotion, right? The community, they're pissed off about another treasure hunter promotion. Duh, duh, duh. But when you look at...
Are you referring to the lamps from last week or the Shadow Gem Virtus update?
Well, they're pissed over both, but this is particular. And they're both tied together. I'll address each. But the smoldering lamps, we're talking about XP, right?
Yeah.
And that's helping progression on a scaling side or a completionist side or however you want, you know, to see it in that way. Now the Virtus is actually jumping the line to give you level 80 gear and get you into bossing right off the bat. The minute you can wear it, you can go. Normally that would have taken you longer, right? Now you can't perk it, yeah. But it would be good. It's good starter gear so that you can learn, right? So, but normally it would have taken you longer.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. When you think about the Hunter nerf and the POF nerf, they're making it slow and grindy for those who don't want to pay. But if you want to pay, you can avoid that grind. That's the problem. That right there is the problem. I have no problem with MTX. None whatsoever. And I think that MTX would be fine if you weren't slowing the rest of the game down. And there would be no need to slow that game down if you got rid of the 200 mil cap. But they're not doing those things because they are slowing it down to make it more enticing to pay. That's what's happening here.
And did you craft this theory or did you read this somewhere?
No, I just thought of this.
Okay.
No, I thought of this a couple of times. Okay. Yeah, no.
For comparison's sake... A Virtus Mask is currently valued at 8 mil on the GE. The Virtus Robe Legs, 26 mil. The Virtus Boots, 3 mil. Virtus Gloves, 2.6. And the Virtus Robe Top, 32.
Right. But now think of this, Shane. What do you normally see in mobile games? You see the same model. And we're going with mobile, and mobile's coming. It couldn't work with old school. They don't have microtransactions. So mobile helped them when it came to subscriptions. It's going to help RS3 when it comes to microtransactions. Because as you just laid out, they make more money from microtransactions.
It's more than half.
Right. So like I said, in of itself, do I get upset about microtransactions? No, not really. But I do have a problem with it when they are adding microtransactions with nerfs. See, that's what makes the difference. And then they have the gall to turn around and tell us we're nerfing it for the integrity of the game. So all these people out there that were saying, oh, no, we really need these nerfs. We really need those nerfs. Mm-hmm. We need it for the integrity of the game. I hope you are really pissed about the smoldering lamps that was bringing in 30 mil. Easily 30 mil from
wait.
50 30 bucks.
30 mil?
Easily. If you had
did
bonus
you
XP
like
when
a
those
video
smoldering volcano
is
came
there
out,
like a video or something of this?
Yes, I think I'd sent it to you last week.
I did not see that.
It was, at first, honestly, I sent it to you thinking, oh, look at this. This is, people's going crazy again for no reason. And then I sat and I kept thinking.
No, I don't see it, Thomas. I don't see it.
Okay.
I don't think you did.
It was a text, but let me, yeah. Regardless, what the smoldering volcanoes were if you had bonus XP, dude, it was insane. Because what would happen? Like, these were more powerful than the Phoenix lamps, which were more powerful than
smoldering lamps.
Yeah. So it was a chance to keep using it over and over and over again. Like, no, like I said, I'm not an MTX hater, man, but that was nuts. And to do it at the same time that they were trying to sell us on the idea of we have to do this because of the integrity of the game, it was bullshit. And there's no way to say it isn't. Like, that was 100% BS. And I think this for me is the problem. Like,
I can't
find
the video. I just did a quick YouTube for RuneScape 3 Volcanic Lamps 30 mil.
It's, let me.
Who made it?
It's Makeru.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's titled When Is It Enough or something like that or something like that. I'll have to look for it. Yeah. He basically had highlighted how much you can get because these were more powerful than the Phoenix. You know, basically traced a progression, and then I had friends in the Skillers community and in their Discord that was running numbers telling me this. Dude, I was shocked because I literally didn't think this was that big of a deal at the time. And then once I put everything together, I was like, wait a minute. Not only are they giving us a freemium model, but they're making us pay a damn subscription on top of it.
Yeah.
And this ain't the $5 subscription from old. This is $10, man.
Right. And,
like,
and
this is a real subscription now.
And one thing I want to see, you know, before going in on this, I would like to see this independently validated, because I know, and you know, that looking at Makeru, there's definitely a specific bias in place there.
Oh, yeah, you know, for sure. But I think regardless, we can say that the treasure hunter has been picking up. And the smoldering lamps were overpowered. I hate the word overpowered. Like, I don't even believe in it. But those were overpowered. And then the very next week, they throw it out to the PVM community. They piss them off.
Yeah, these are the Virtus,
but
Shadow Virtus armor.
But it's all a way of jumping ahead in the line. If you pay, you can jump ahead. And that is something you see in mobile games. That is something you see in the freemium model. You don't see that in... Normally, you don't see that in subscription-based. And if RuneScape was still $5, okay, maybe I can get away with it, but it's not.
And see,
like,
that
it's
kind
not
of,
that much that, cheaper than a
right,
AAA
that
MMO.
That colors my opinion as well, because I am still paying $5 on it, too. So that
right,
that is partially and, where my opinion comes from.
I mean, and me too, but I you got to look at it as in, you know, I'm an avid, you know, ESO player. You can get ESO Plus. It's like $15 a month.
Yeah,
that's like $5 more, but look at
and
the
you know,
difference
I have,
ESO and RuneScape.
I have long been a proponent of having a plus membership in this game, a membership where you get more, you know, where you have no microtransactions pushed on you, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of a protection racket, man. That's like Mafia. That's a mob, Shane.
Right. And I mean, Cambridge mob. I could say, you know, to you, if I didn't value your opinion and whatnot, I could say, it's the Cambridge mob docking there. They're feeding
but
us.
No,
that.
This was they're telling this was Tannis.
They're telling Makeru and they're telling Shithole to say 30 million XP. You can here yeah. have the money to do this, show it off, and yada yada yada, that kind of thing.
No, this was me. I even ran it by one of my closest friends. He was the only person I actually told, and I asked him just to say, "Have you seen this anywhere? Have you seen anybody point this out?" He was like, "No," because the community did what they do. They got pissed and they raged, but no one actually thought about what was going on. They slowed it down. They're slowing it down for everyone else.
But I also have to ask the question that, you know, with the designer diary that we saw a week and a half ago on that, in particular, the future of RuneScape and how there will be no dead content in the future, that implies that they want to speed things up through gameplay as well.
How is that? They're just talking about remastering and making the game better.
Yeah,
they're talking about freshening the paint so that they can get away with this.
No. But at the same time, 99 to 120 construction or summoning would have to have better XP than a 1 to 99 construction or summoning.
As it should, but they'll do the same kinds of things, Shane. They'll do the same kind of... Mark my words. There will be ways in there that will speed it up tremendously. I'm not talking about a little bit. We're talking tremendously. I mean, the perfect example is the farm. Allowing the bonus experience, just like you said, if you are willing to pay, if you are willing to participate in Treasure Hunter, this was not a nerf for you.
Yeah. Or if you have the bonds to buy the keys and then the bonus XP.
Either way, Jagex made money off of microtransactions.
Yeah. And there's also the image you posted to me in regards to the Shadow Gem Virtus that the death cost of the Shadow is only 18k versus 100k to reclaim it for the regular Virtus set mask. So it's cheaper to run too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is the argument that it's not augmentable.
Mm-hmm. And you can't get components.
You can't get components from it.
So those things.
Is that worth an extra 82,000 GP?
Oh, I don't think. No, I don't think it justifies the death cost being that at all. I don't think it justifies the death cost. I don't think the death cost is in any way defendable. I honestly would like to think that that was an oversight on their part. Somehow, some way, it was a mistake. Because that does not make any sense at all. I don't know. I mean, that's where I'm at.
I'm not willing to accept this theory until we see it happen again.
Well. I mean, it's out there. Like, this is... I mean, I'm going off of what I've seen over the summer. And from what I've seen this summer is nerfs and Treasure Hunter. And that's why I can't... Even a broken clock's right twice a day, Shane. So... I might be on to something. I might not. But I honestly think
it just comes down to the fact the nerfs were done because in terms of the future outlook in particular that we saw in the designer diaries, one of the things that was said is that they need to manage their XP curves.
They're not managing
Yes, they
their
are.
XP
because
curve.
If
How
you,
are they doing
if
that
you
if they're letting
the,
you
if
buy
If you take
it.
The top chunks down,
they're
you
letting
can,
you buy
you
it,
can bring
Shane.
Everybody up later with new different farming and hunter training methods, and you know, maybe it was a mistake to allow bonus. Just wait, maybe it was a mistake to allow you to have bonus XP on the farm.
It was a plan. They meant to do it.
But I don't know that there is a top-down approach from marketing through microtransactions or through through microtransactions to the team that makes the farm that says, hey, let's allow bonus XP so people will spend more on microtransactions. Hey, let's nerf Hunter so that'll happen too.
I never thought it either. But when you look at what is the results, I mean, that's what's happening.
I think it's a case of seeing things that are in line with how you felt about the nerfs eventually or initially.
Yeah, but I've never had a problem with Treasure Hunter.
I know. Like, Treasure Hunter like that. But I'm saying in regards to the nerfs, how you saw the Hunter and farming nerf.
But it didn't have – but it's not – like I didn't have any opinion on Treasure Hunter.
No, definitely not.
Like, so those two things, like, I just – I don't know. Do they have a top-down approach? I don't know. Like, it sounds conspiratorial.
Exactly, and that's what I'm concerned about here. Because, you know, we make fun of the Cambridge mob for whatnot, you know?
Right, but
and I don't want to be perpetrating those things.
But it's being – well, we're not perpetrating anything. No one's – thanks for your vote of confidence, too, by the way. But no one's mentioned this. No one said – I haven't seen this anywhere, and I've asked – like I said, I asked if anyone had seen it. So I actually haven't seen anyone come across this. But this is how freemium games work. Like, it's an excessive grind, or you pay to get to the front of the line.
It is also, and I will say this, it is also a tactic employed by the Chinese.
Well, who owns Jagex, Shane?
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I'm not going overboard. I'm not adding in the suspicious mod disappearances or anything like that. I mean, I don't think there's nothing to that or anything. I'm only looking at what we have in front of us over the last 3 or 4 months. I mean, that's really where all this came from.
There's no way of confirming it.
Well, if we keep getting more nerfs and more Treasure Hunter, I mean, it's a pretty good idea that that's happening.
But they said front out that they want to balance the XP curve so that they can add in new content that won't be dead content on arrival, meaning more powerful and better than it was previously.
But if that's true, then why are they ramping up on the Treasure Hunter?
End of the quarter?
If what you're saying is correct, then they're the dumbest company when it comes to their image that I've ever seen in my life. Like, they make EA look brilliant, right? Like,
And you know why that is? It's because there is a central place where these opinions get posted and they get concentrated called r/RuneScape. And we all know, as we've talked about last week, and I was saying this to you guys, is that it's more comfortable to be in the majority of the minority. And it's more comfortable to be in either the majority or the minority, whichever one is louder. And that's exactly what Reddit provides for. And that's why there needs to be a stronger approach to make it a more positive environment.
No, you're not going to get a disagreement from me that Reddit needs to be more positive. But Jagex is really not paying attention to how they're coming across.
Right, but that's what the noisy section is saying. That's what the noisy section is saying. But what does everybody else out there think who's just playing the game and doesn't give two squats about what happens in the social media echo chambers?
No, I think this was what's different, Shane. I think the smoldering lamps or the smoldering volcanoes was – I think it was different. I don't think there's been a Treasure Hunter controversy this big since Silverhawks maybe. Like, this one's big. It's bigger than I thought. Like, it's bigger than I thought. Like, I really didn't – like I said, I was making fun of it until I started thinking, wait a minute. They just nerfed Hunter. Wait a minute. It's nerfed to farm. But you can use bonus XP. Uh-oh. We might have a problem here. I'm on the side that you need one or the other. But both together make you look really bad. And shouldn't there be somebody saying, okay, even if this isn't, even if it's not intentional, someone should think about how it looks? Like, it doesn't look good.
Well, Jagex has never been a company that really managed that. I mean, going all the way back to the beginning, it's something that has always been an issue for them. They have got better. They have got worse recently. So.
Yeah, I don't. Well, and that's the other. I mean, that bugs me too. They were on such a good streak, and then the summer hit, and I don't know where we're at now. At this point, I'm
still
waiting
feel good
for
after,
the bank.
I still feel good after the Designer Diaries last week.
Well, I did too, and that's the worst thing. It's like you're playing with my heart, Jagex. Like I actually thought, okay. I felt good on the development side. Then you turn around and they start just, you know, really going all in on the MTX, which normally isn't a big deal, but I think in conjunction with everything else, it might be a bigger deal this time.
Well, there's two options for this. And, you know, it's quite simple. And it requires, you know, if there is a true problem, it requires everybody to stand up and solve it. And if there's not a true problem, then things will continue on as they are. And the solution for this is that complaining and bitching online doesn't get you anything on this. The most surefire way to have this stop is to have microtransaction revenue decrease by 10, 20, 30% next year. And what that requires everybody to do, and, you know, I can imagine that the people who are complaining about this don't ever buy keys. You don't buy keys. I don't buy keys. And if this is a true issue for the majority of the community out there, after this volcanic lap issue, stop buying Treasure Hunter keys. That's the only way this is going to change. Is if the money shifts.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. I mean, that's
or
the only
if there is a top-down decree by the EU or at the UK government after Brexit happens that, hey, you can't have games a chance like this. You need to disclose full odds and push them towards more of a cosmetic streak like Rocket League or Overwatch.
Yeah. And see, and you know what's one of the saddest things about this whole situation is, Shane? You know how you talked about they backed off a little bit last year?
Yeah.
Well, remember what else happened last year? In the microtransaction, they tried an experiment called Rune Pass. And if people hadn't lost their goddamn minds, then we might be looking at Rune Pass right now instead of Treasure Hunter, which would have been a much better option. And you know what? It wouldn't have mattered if you nerfed things at that point. I mean, I would still have a problem with it, but there wouldn't be a tie-in with Treasure Hunter at that point.
Yeah.
But everyone lost their minds. So, like, you know, and that's why I didn't take six, or you know
what the other option is, and I can't believe I'm saying this, aside from people just stopping buying the microtransactions, go play old school.
Yeah. And I think people are going to be doing that. Some.
But then we're going to have the same problem because you cannot have a majority game in a company as large as Jagex in 2019 without microtransactions. Microtransactions are going to come to old school, whether it's next year, the year after, or the year after that. They are going to come. With that many subscribers out there.
If they were coming, though, they would have came with mobile.
Oh, no. You don't want to bring it out with mobile like that because the first early adopters of old school RuneScape Mobile are people who have played it before on the desktop and are playing right now, and players who are coming back. You don't want to do that to them. You want to do that after that initial base and that initial rush is established and fixed in and set on always playing old school RuneScape Mobile.
Dude, if you think that the r/RuneScape people are negative, put microtransactions in old school.
I know. And that's just like I dared them last week. To make that change they made to the miscellanea quest regarding choosing your marriage partner. I dared them to do that too. Which it shouldn't be a problem for them to do that. They should just be able to put that in. Because it is 2019 after all.
Well, yeah. I don't know. It's just, I mean, I think we can at least, at the very least, we can agree this is a bad look. It's bad optics. You're getting more, we're getting, you know, I mean, we haven't been getting a lot in the way of game updates. This stuff is just sitting out there. It's simmering. It's not going anywhere. And then from week to week, they're shoveling another load of coal on the fire. And you're like, what are you doing? People are going to RuneFest dressed as keys, which I think is hilarious. But
that's pretty funny.
I mean, come on. It is pretty funny, right? It's pretty funny. But, I mean, you know, and you know what? Part of the microtransactions is our fault because they did try different things,
yep.
And we yep. automatically shut it down yep. before it had yep. a chance. But, you know, like I said, I hope I'm not right. But if we keep getting nerfs.
And I think it's fair to say that this is based entirely on conjecture, and there is no
completely
there is no hard evidence for that. So what
this
I don't
is completely
what I don't want to
me.
See this weekend is I don't want to see somebody going online posting clips of this show saying we're starting conspiracy theories out there. If any of our listeners do that, I will come after you, and we will
it's
have
a
harsh
conspiracy
discussion.
I'm looking at A plus B possibly could equal C. Like it's F. Or you have two unrelated things, but if they're unrelated, they're not
yeah.
popular.
There's a famous Star Trek episode that comes to mind with this. It's called the Voyager Conspiracy Theory. Or the Voyager Conspiracy. Have you watched Voyager?
Actually, just a few of those. That was Janeway,
right? Yeah,
that was right?
Janeway.
Yeah. So I watched a few of those, yeah.
All right. There's an episode in season 6 called The Voyager Conspiracy. 7 of 9 stitches numerous things together and comes up with the theory that Voyager's mission to the Delta Quadrant was actually a plant by Starfleet based on just sticking all kinds of information together. And that's what this kind of sounds like. But, you know, this is a podcast, and I think it's an important thing to discuss. And, you know, hey, if this is proven right in 3 months, 6 months, a year, or maybe even 3 weeks, we'll pat ourselves on the back and say we had it first.
Well, maybe. I mean, either way, I'm answering Lynchpin's question of,
yeah,
it's kind of – I think they're going to a freemium model with subscription, so you're actually getting both.
Yeah.
All like, right. I mean, if you want to take it that way, I'm answering his question as, yeah, I think it's kind of both right now.
All right, fair enough.
So there you go.
Next one from Sunset Fish. If you could choose one creature to start a quest line off of, who would you pick? Naturally, I'd go with the unicorns or the centaurs, and I don't mean killing them with giant rocks. Remember the mention of a hornless unicorn. There's stories which can be told. And I just want to say that when I meant come after you, it doesn't mean that I'm going to actually go out there and try and hurt someone. It just means that I'm going to come and talk to you, and we're going to have a discussion. And if you post these clips somewhere and they gain traction, you're going to come on the show and tell us why you did that. I think that'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, creature. I'm trying to think of a creature that
storyline around the
yeah.
creature.
Yeah.
Well, aren't we're supposed to find? I mean, we have a centaur out there, right? That's just out in space now ever since Death of Chivalry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have liked to know what was happening with that. Or can't we have to make up a new one?
Yeah, I don't know. My creative brain is shot right now. You know, one thing we were promised way back when is that there would be a whole storyline around mammoths in the north, and you know the only mammoths we got were the Slayer creatures. So I'd like to see maybe something about the mammoths somehow, if at all possible. That would be one thing that I'd start a fresh storyline off of that we don't have right now. So So I think that would be a good one. And yeah, the Centaur is definitely one that's out there and it's just like off in this weird corner. And, I think if we're looking at Death of Chivalry, that might fall under the Sears Village blanket, which they would have to do a Sears Village remaster for, I guess, based on the content stream a couple weeks back.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
So,
yeah.
But you know, the one I want to hear about the most that we, you know, I can only say Gnomes, I can say Elemental Workshop Part 5. Those are just quest lines that I'd like to see continued. But one creature that we've seen kind of tangentially and we really haven't delved that deep into, the Icene.
Yeah.
Because there was that one bit in one of the my rec quests. And beyond that, there's really not that much mention about the Icene, except in the lore books and, of course, Commander Zeliana.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, that's all part of the vampire questline, right?
Yeah.
What's his face?
It was
actually
so fun going through. Yeah.
That one was fun because, like, the Icene occupied that land, right? Before the vampires. And we also know, like, Sir Domin's Icene, right?
The ambassador is Icene. I don't believe Sir Domin himself is Icene. They're just aligned to the Sir Domin.
But he's blue, isn't he?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm colorblind, but I thought he was blue.
Right, he is blue, but Commander Zeliana is also not blue. The outfit is blue.
Oh, I thought they were blue.
No.
I thought Icene's were blue.
Sir Domin is blue. Icene, or sorry, I think what you're thinking of in terms of being blue was one of the very early pre-graphical reworks of Commander Zeliana.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Icene would be, I think, a jumping off point to continue the vampire storyline in a different way. Plus, there's also lots of interesting, unique things they could do with the Second Age if the Needle shenanigans do continue going forward on that. And, you know, because of that, I'm just thinking, boy, I wish we could get back to these quests where we could have, you know, 5-6 quests a year. That's what I put in the survey.
Oh, man, you know what I'd love to know more about?
What's
that? Dragon Riders.
Yeah, we might have that with Karapak and whatnot, right?
I mean, we only had that one, and that was such a cool... I think the concept of the Dragon Rider was just so cool. Love to know more about that.
Yeah.
I would totally build a storyline around the Dragon Riders.
Yeah. What about the Centaurs and the Mammoths? Like, Sunset Fish asked, and then I mentioned the Mammoths as well. Those would be two interesting ones, I think, too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm more partial to the Centaurs because the Mammoths suck if you've ever tried to fight them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But I don't think of them being like sentient, you know, in the same way that a centaur is, kind of thing.
But I mean, there could be a whole different storyline around it. And, you know, just say creature, and I think naturally a mammoth based storyline would probably morph into something Fremenek related.
That would make sense.
So,
I mean, those are the furthest north people, right?
Yeah. Except for the lunar people, Lunar Island.
Yeah, but they're Fremenek.
They are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Remember they went there. There was a break in the, what the, they don't
right,
like.
Right, right. Okay.
Yeah. They don't get along with the dude, with the head. Yeah. So it's a whole thing, but yeah, they're totally Fremenek.
Alrighty. Thank you, Sunset Fish. That was a fun question. Yet again, you know, last time Sunset Fish sent in the question, it was about why we love RuneScape. And I think, Sunset Fish, you are definitely on a roll with these great questions that are just, you know, core, essential RuneScape. They're not, you know, big shockers like the microtransaction question, which is perfectly fine. And I enjoyed that one, too. But sometimes it's just nice to just get back to how things used to be question related. So Thank you very much. And if you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. You can also send them in to us through Twitter @rsbnb, where we post most of our stories throughout the week, like our Informer articles, our nibbles and whatnot, and of course the questions there. Just DM us or send us an at mention, and there we go. @rsbnb is where you can send them in. So thank you once again for your questions, everyone. Nicely done.
Very good.
All right, so tech news. Facebook's in the news again. They plan to launch their own, as they're calling it, Supreme Court for handling takedown appeals. And what they aim to do with this is they say they want to have a system in place that will effectively create what is a Supreme Court that will look after all of its billion plus members. And this new board, or the Supreme Court, as people are calling it, will have five key powers. And some of these are, and you know, if you look at the charter here on this, this can say they can request that Facebook provide information that it needs in a timely manner. It can make interpretations of Facebook standards and guidelines in light of Facebook's articulated values, and it can instruct the company to allow or remove content, to uphold or reverse a decision leading to content being permitted or removed, and to issue prompt written explanations of the board's decisions. I don't like how this feels, because it sounds to me like Facebook wants to effectively create a nation that transcends all other nations. And if you have a problem with something that Facebook does, well, you better get in line, you better make an appeal and work its way all the way up to the Facebook Supreme Court. And, you know, Mark Zuckerberg writing a letter on this, of course he would. He says, if someone disagrees with a decision we've made, they can appeal to us first, and soon they will be able to further appeal this to an independent board. As an independent organization, we hope it gives people confidence that their views will be heard and Facebook doesn't have unlimited power over their expression.
Actually, it does have unlimited power.
It certainly does. And you know what the real stupid thing about this is that nobody realizes? Is that you can have a piece of content, a video, an image, a meme posted to Facebook, and they can remove it. And you'll see that it's been removed because you look at your timeline and say, hey, it's gone. Where did it go? Right? But there's also something called the shadow ban, which means you can post it, but only you're going to see it. And your friends might not even see it. And the question is, how is someone supposed to know if they've been shadow banned? Yes, you know if your content has been banned, if they remove it straight up, but what if this shadow banning happens and rather than actually just removing content, they just go down this path and people don't actually know if their content has been removed?
Yeah, it sounds to me like this would be a good case to stop turning over our political power to corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe keep it and vote.
Yeah, and you know what one of the funniest things is? If you look at Google, Facebook, Twitter, practically every large tech company under the sun, they, on the surface, say they're progressive and they issue progressive values. But, oh boy, they're donating to folks like, I believe it was, what's the guy's name from Iowa? Steve something or other? Steve
from
King.
Where?
Steve King.
Oh, the Cantaloupe Calves guy. Oh,
yeah, there you go.
Lord.
And,
yeah. You
know, people don't need this because they have this in their day-to-day life. You look on the news, you look on the TV, you say X, Y, Z case is going up to the Supreme Court and we're going to get a ruling on it. Do we really need something like this on Facebook, you know?
No, this is ridiculous.
Like they want to govern their 2.4 billion active users, they say. And that's what it's turning into. You post on that website, you are taking effect, being part of a pseudo-nation.
But see, this is what happens when you leave all of the when you leave companies to regulate themselves. They should have, if we had regulations in place, they would have to adhere to that
right off the bat.
Yeah.
And you don't
need this.
But here's the problem. You can create a regulation in the U.S. to do that, but you can't guarantee that Canada and the U.K. are going to do the same. And you definitely can't guarantee that China and India are going to do the same as well.
Well, right, but plenty of companies have no problem kissing China's ass and giving them whatever they want. They'll make a whole new platform so they can use it.
Yeah.
So, and, I mean, whatever.
I mean, the problem here is that we have just uncovered one of the biggest issues, and it has been an issue for a long time in these big transnational tech companies, is that they are, for all intents and purposes, not beholden to the U.S. to get the regulations from. They're not beholden to Canada. They're not beholden to the U.K. They will go to the countries where they can operate to make the money. And because of that, because the laws are different in Canada, the U.S., and the U.K., that means that they feel that they have the duty, I guess, or I guess in some cases the responsibility, as Facebook feels. As per transparency of all things, as they're saying this, it came from a transparency report. They feel that they have the ability and they have the responsibility to create their own systems that run parallel to that of our countries.
Well, I can fix it. I mean, at least in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, no more of this companies are exempt from the Bill of Rights. No, you're not.
And, you know, I don't like the fact, and I would certainly never choose to live under the nation of Facebook. And that's what this sounds like is happening, is that, hey, if you break one of these laws, you got to go to this court and do this, this, and this. And, you know, this just opens the door to add in more laws and more rules on Facebook internally of things you can and can't say on the platform.
Yeah. And you know what? That is like –
Oh, and the panel's going to be chosen by Facebook. The panel of 40 people.
Well, of course, but see, that's like the least of the implications, because I don't know if you know much about the TPP deal that was coming in.
Yeah, but we're part of it. Canada's a part of it.
Okay, well then you know, like they were trying to set up their own courts for that. So, and that has a hell of a lot bigger ramifications than Facebook telling you what you can and can't say. I mean, that stuff really, really matters. And if you get used to letting Facebook do this to you, then it's going to be a lot easier for that to come in to where, we're just going to see you because you have the audacity to want clean water. No, we're going to pollute whatever we want. We're a Chinese company. We'll do what we want. And we'll sue you if you hurt our profits. Like, if you let this go with Facebook, then it's going to be easier for them to put that in place next time around.
I think you just hit the nail on the head.
Thank you.
I would, you know, I seriously wish I could cut Facebook use off, but I need it for the other podcast. And I might actually dive into some of our analytics and see if we actually do truly need it, because this is just becoming absurd, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't really do anything with Facebook. I don't post. I mean, my wife will tag me or whatever, but I absolutely don't really say anything. But that's just my own little protest.
All right. Next piece of tech news is that iOS 13 is launched today.
Yay!
And, you know, this has dark mode of many other features.
Oh, I forgot about dark mode.
Yeah.
I'm totally updating.
I wonder how it's going to work with your screen inversion.
I don't have screen inversion on my phone.
Okay.
Yeah, I use like everything on my phone is a double tap. If you want it to work, like if you touch it once, it reads it to you. So it's like if I touch the time, it reads the time to me. Or if I touch a text, it reads the text to me. So everything I touch, it tells me. And so that I haven't had the inversion on it because it makes pictures look really weird.
Yeah.
And so dark mode will be excellent, man. Excellent.
Yeah. Let's see. I just actually installed the update before we launched here. And if you go into general appearance, display and brightness, you'll be able to find the dark mode setting. And I mean, it looks good. I guess. I think I prefer the light mode, to be honest. I don't know. But that's just me. Another feature of this is that there's the new swipe text or gesture-based text feature, which Android has had for years and iOS is finally just getting. So that's interesting. Let's see if that pops up. And, you know, I think they finally have to do that because people wanted something like that, to that effect. So that's probably the two biggest features that end users will say. And of course, there's lots of new APIs and whatnot that'll be arriving soon with the new iPhones in terms of cameras. If you have an iPhone 10 series, 10R or 10S, you'll get a camera upgrade with iOS 13 when it launches, in terms of the photos will be able to look better on that front. New maps experience rebuilt from the ground up. It feels like they just rebuilt Apple Maps yet again. And I mean, you really have no choice to use Apple Maps on an iPhone, because if you're navigating at all, you're going to need that to interface with your car or whichever, because you can't really do that with the Google app that easily. So that's something that, you know, is a standing out issue for many people out there. New Memoji, which, I mean, I really don't care about. I remember there's one year that the entire update seemed like it was focused around iMessage of all things. So, I mean, it is what it is on that front. They're calling it quick path typing. That's exactly what it is. There's a new profile associated with your Messages app. That's one other big thing about it. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that people are missing with this and potentially could gloss over on this is that there's now something called Sign In with Apple, where if you're on your iOS device and a website or an app wants you to sign in to it, you'll effectively just be able to authenticate with something that is similar to an industry standard called OAuth. And what that just lets you do in a quick nutshell is it lets you access a third party without giving them your password. And the idea is that your Apple account will be secured with the biometrics of your device. So in theory, every account that you sign into with that should be secured and unlockable with either your fingerprint or your face when you're using your iPhone device. So that's probably the biggest thing, aside from dark mode and the keyboard update, that I think we can look at on this. So I don't know that I have much else to say on this. I'm still kind of going through iOS 13. It looks like there's a whole lot new in the Reminders app, you know, the ability to have sublists of all things on that regard. Smart lists, for example, are lists that automatically organize your reminders and group them by flagged, scheduled, and today, amongst other things as well. So I don't know. I think it's a good update. It's more substantive than previous years, but at the same time, it's not gonna change our experience all that much. So, and you know, I think we just have to say that the last iPhones to support this will be the iPhone 6 style devices, the 6S, the 6S Plus, and the SE. So, and you know, it feels good on my 8, so it should be good on a 7, hopefully. And That's iOS 13. It's pretty good.
I know.
Is there anything you're looking forward to in particular on it?
I was really looking forward to the dark mode.
Okay.
I almost forgot that was even a thing until you just mentioned it.
Yeah. Like, and, oh, yeah. And I mean, if you don't invert your iPhone screen as it is, dark mode is going to be the one for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's available today. So you can sign up for that. Just go into your settings app and start downloading, and away you go.
Yeah, cool.
All right. It also looks like there's more in the Shortcuts app from last year, but, I mean, that was a fun pick of the week, but it was kind of limited on that, so I'll see if what's new on there as we move on. All right, so next up, Discord. Discord Nitro. They're changing the way they do Discord Nitro. And, you know, you remember last year, last October, we talked about the Nitro Games catalog and how it could be a contender against Steam and Epic. But with those first annual contracts coming up, they are not going to be continuing the contracts going forward. Because they say, through your valuable feedback, it became clear that while we and some of you love these games, the truth is the vast majority of Nitro subscribers didn't play them. So after careful consideration, the Nitro Games catalog will be removed on October 15th, 2019. And they say if you want to cancel your Nitro subscription because of this, they are offering you a full refund, and you can go through the ropes to do that on the Discord billing page. And with that, it's not the end for Nitro. They're going to do a refocus on this. They are going to make Nitro focus on its core mission of more features, fun, and enhancements for hanging out in Discord with the people you care about. So they link to a feedback form so you can, you know, fill this out and say what you want to see more of in Discord, which is actually really nice for them to do that. And the $9.99 Nitro plan that they say they're going to be adding more onto it, but recently we have things like the server boost, the Go Live feature, which we're going to be using for the round table this weekend, where you can stream your gameplay. And they're also going to be doubling the size of uploads to 100 megabytes for Nitro subscribers. And they're also reducing the number of boosts needed for a server to reach level 3, down from 50 to 20. And, you know, I think some of you on this podcast will remember that when Nitro came out, I said that Discord should just focus on doing what they do best. And that's, you know, making the best free voice communication system out there for game players that has ever existed. You know, for me, we used to use Mumble before it because Mumble was free and we hosted a server. It was open source and it was cumbersome to use. And then there's TeamSpeak. You know, you can get a TeamSpeak server for $60 a month for 64 slots, which is, you know, just downright criminal looking at it. Whereas with Discord,
not a month or a year?
Year.
Oh, okay,
$64 like, bucks a year for that. Yeah,
a month.
That's cheap on the cheap end. Back when we were running the Star Trek Online fleet, the people there paid, I think it was $132 a year for
a 100
slot server. Yeah. So, by comparison, you can bring however many people you want into Discord. It just handles it nicely. It's got a beautiful voice codec for things like podcasts. And, you know, also looking at it, it just works on every platform out there. I could say that I'd like a bit more on the iOS notification sign, but that's minor. And, you know, thinking about it too, all the different Discords that I'm a part of, it just is a all-encompassing communication strategy. So I'm glad that they're just sitting there focusing on that. So that's really good. So,
yeah, once, basically our clan switched to a Discord from a TeamSpeak, and once I started using it, I never looked back. It's great, but I don't begrudge them for trying.
Yeah.
I think it was good. You know, it was good to try. But now maybe, yeah, go back and focus on what you do best, and they really do this best.
Yeah.
It sure beats the hell out of Skype.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we always had to do, and this added extra processing time to the show, when we would use Skype, we would have to run a noise reduction algorithm, and at some point you'd have the middle spoken words being dropped out because noise reduction isn't a perfect science. Whereas with this, I only get the transmissions of people when they're actually talking, and Discord has noise reduction as well. And I never need to run noise reduction on the podcast because right now I'm not hearing anything from you because you're not talking. So it's really, really good.
Yeah. It's a great service. I can't believe it's free, but I don't want to give them any ideas.
Alrighty, that's it for tech news. We're going to move on to our other things. But before, there's nothing before that. I was in a different mindset. But all right. Woodcutting skill of the month. Yeah. Jamandy 52, 4.8 mil. Parnassius 1.9. Me, 588,000 in third.
Oh. Looky there.
And that ends tonight. You know, I could have done more on this, but this was just my daily logs at the Ark, you know? I could have done more.
Okay, I was gonna ask if you did golden bamboo.
It's golden bamboo. It's golden bamboo. I did it. Let's see, how many days did I do it? Let's see, looking at this. I did it 1, 2, 3. I did it 3 days. I didn't do the last 2 days because the last 2 days I was doing farm stuff. And prior to that, I was actually, believe it or not, making divine charges because I ran out of those. So that's what I was doing there. But. And there is a mining competition that's starting up, so by the time you guys are listening, this will be well underway, and that runs for the next week. This one should be very interesting to watch, given this is the first time we've run a mining competition with the new mining rework.
Oh, crap. I think I forgot to sign up.
Yeah, well, there's still time to sign up. You still have about 8 hours to the time to sign up when we're recording this. So.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Yeah.
But good. Very good. So, we'll report back next week, but it looks like Jamandy 52 has this one in the bag, and we'll see what happens with the next one. And speaking of things that we've achieved, let's start with the achievements of the week.
All right. Well, let's get this started with Shane.
With that's 99 exactly how you're Farby. Supposed to say it.
Is it? Yes. All right. Nailed it. So, 99 Farming, September 17th. Way too go, buddy.
I'll talk more about that after, but continue.
And then we have the Lion with 120 agility. Ouch. September 17th. We have Wolfotopia with 99 Dungeoneering on September 15th. We have Lorasaurus with 99 Fire Making on September 15th. And Curtis with 99 Divination on September 14th.
Nicely done. Continuing, we have Barrage Tank with 120 Dungeoneering on the 14th. That's an ouch from me. Chaotic Eric with 120 Invention on the 13th. Wolfotopia with 99 Farming on the 12th. And Minority with 99 Hunter on the 12th as well. So congratulations, everybody.
Nice. Nice achievements.
Indeed. I'll talk more about mine in just a moment when we get there. But it's pick of the week time, and I'm going to go this week. And this is a pick of the week that I never thought I would be doing. It's a Minecraft pick of the week.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Minecraft itself is one of those games that I never understood the appeal of because it's like, hey, it's building blocks and whatnot. But there are mods for it, and you can get mods, and you can install them easily with the Twitch Minecraft launcher. It makes it, you know, a simple point and click measure of clicking install this mod and away you go. It downloads it and you're good to go, and then it launches it and you're ready to play. But one thing that I am going to be highlighting is a mod called Lapito's Galacticraft, and it also includes a whole selection of other mods with it. And, you know, one of the key points of this mod is that it aims to allow you to go to space. Yes, you can go to space. You can go to the go to the moon. You can go to Mars. And that's fun in itself. But there's also something else you could do with this mod. It includes a mod. The mod pack includes a mod called Nuclear Craft. And you can effectively become a nuclear scientist and build nuclear reactors, refine their fuels. You can make highly enriched uranium-based fuels, lowly enriched uranium fuels, which are safer. You can make fuels based on neptunium, plutonium, americium, berkelium, californium, curium. You can go pretty much up the entire track on this. And it's up to you to design the reactor so it doesn't melt down. You can factor in the way its cooling works. You can also change the way the reactor looks in terms of how big it is, in terms of its dimensions. The sky is the limit with how you define it. You can have it cooled actively. You can have it cooled passively. And that's just the fission reactor side, the splitting of the atoms. But there's also fusion reactors. And a few of us have been playing on a Minecraft server with this, and you know, we've been doing various things. Some people went to space, some people wanted to do other things, but Mike and myself, who was the co-owner of RSBNB, we decided that, hey, we're going to solve our power troubles and we're going to be the nuclear team. And we have built a successful fission reactor, and we are currently working on building a successful hydrogen-based fusion reactor that is fusing hydrogen together to create lots of power in the process. And for anybody who knows how fusion works, you effectively have to be doing this at temperatures that are hotter than the sun. And you can imagine how that goes in terms of the creation of plasma and other very hot materials. And, you know, let's just say if you don't get your magnetic containment field right, well, you're going to have a bad day at the end of it. So this is something we've been working on for about a week and a half now. I think this weekend we're finally going to get to the point where we can do a reactor start. And that should be fun to see that reactor start up safely. We started it up once before, but we ran out of power. And we lost some of the magnets, creating a bit of a mess. So that was a bit of a setback. We also started it up once accidentally when we didn't mean to and weren't quite ready to do that yet. So we had to stop. But it's an interesting thing, and you know, it's Minecraft in that it allows you to, you know, have complete customization with building blocks, except this time you're actually building machines with it. So that's the pick of the week.
Very, very cool. So within the mod pack, does it do anything graphically, or is it still just
Minecraft block? No, they're all Minecraft blocks still.
Okay. I was curious.
Yeah.
There's so many mods for Minecraft, so there's just probably thousands of them at this point.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And I mean, it's taxing on the system to run. I have 8 gigabytes of RAM, and it's maxed out the RAM before, as Minecraft does, being a Java game and whatnot. So, I mean, you'll want to restart the client every so often. But I mean, it's a fun little distraction on that in terms of what you can do. And the idea behind creating the fusion reactor was that, hey, let's just create the fusion reactor and let's effectively create the end game in terms of power generation. And hopefully that's what will happen when we start it up. So, fingers crossed.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. What have you been up to?
Same thing, gathering charms and trying to tend to my animals now. Because, you know, I don't want to leave them to neglect. I keep, every time I show up at the farm a little bit late, I keep hearing Sarah McLaughlin in the background, like, "You're always up an angel. Gotta feed them more." but really pretty low key. Like I said, I spend a lot of time in my player on dungeon, my Slayer dungeon. Because it's just nice for me to go down there and just collect charms and stuff. And so collecting charms and collecting beans and waiting for that fateful day where I cash it all in.
Yes. All right. As for me, as you probably gathered based on the achievements, I did get 99 farming on the alt. And, you know, this was a couple days after the nerf happened because I neglected to actually insert the character to our high score system and I wanted it to be tracked. So that's why I had to wait. But, you know, I kept with tradition, and I didn't actually get 99 at the farm. I grew a magic tree in Falador with a magic bean, and got 99 farming in the same place I initially got 99 farming.
Oh, look at you. That's where I did it. Look at you, Shane.
Yeah, and I could have waited until September 23rd. Would have been 12 years since I first got 99 farming in my first 99. But I didn't.
Oh, because, that's crazy.
Because my membership is running out soon.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, I would have waited for, you know, the exact 12-year mark. But it's close enough, I figure. 5 days, right?
Dude, so. Totally close enough.
But beyond that, I am just sending my workers on Anachronia on a vacation because I have pretty much maxed out all of the materials there. I'm just waiting on that dinosaur tooth, which I'll get if I ever do Slayer. But beyond that, you know, just looking in the farm, trying to sell things this week, I don't know that people are, as I mentioned in the farm segment, really looking to buy shinies yet for XP. So I think the market is going to be in beans, but we'll keep watching that.
It'll be coming.
I mean, yeah, I mean, as soon as the efficient players look at it, it'll be the hot sauce, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But aside from that, just did some divine charge crafting because I was out of all those. So just back to the divination colony. Again, you know, that old pastime of, you know, when there's nothing to do on RS, what do? You go collect divine charges, right?
That's right. So, make some money.
Yeah.
Or save some money, however you want to do it.
Exactly. But I believe that's it, so I don't have much else to say on this. I think we had a charged enough episode as it was this week. So I'll just say that if you guys, of course, want show notes at all, it's all available at update.rsbnb.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on any podcast listener out there, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube. Just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe and tap on whichever one or click on whichever one suits your fancy and subscribe to the podcast. And we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. So take care, everyone, and have a good week.
See ya.